Item 4, report by regional board members. Dr. Hunter?
I just want to recognize the Morro Bay National Estuary Program. I received in the mail, and I assume it went out widely, some information about new developments with their program, but they also put out this just little simple two-page ideas about stormwater pollution on one side and get the scoop on the poop on the other. And I always want to acknowledge efforts by our local organizations, community efforts to keep people informed on important work that we are all engaged in and which we all have a role to play in, including in our community gardens and when we walk our dogs. So.
Great. Thank you. Do you know who they sent it out to?
You know, I plan to follow up with the director. I just received it, and I think I would like to know also how it fits into the program, what else they might be doing,
right,
and understand how their work, they may be working collaboratively with others in the region, including the Monterey Bay Sanctuary. Sometimes these things are developed as educational templates and shared out so that the initial design work or information is organized and structured so the facts are correct, and then others can take the information and build it into any outreach they're conducting. So I do want to follow up with them.
So is this information not necessarily suitable for residents?
No, this came to my home.
It did? Great.
Yes.
Okay.
So it came in a little flyer packet that said, you know, some news about the National Estuary Program. And that's not something that comes every day.
Right.
So I wanted to follow up on it, but I did want to mention it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other board member reports? Mr. Johnston?
Yeah, a couple of things. I attended a workshop by the State Bar on groundwater nitrates in Davis on April 24th. I found it personally pretty useful, both for Dr. Harder's presentation, Dr. Tom Harder, who did the SPX 1 report, and for a sense of some of the complexities in nitrate budgeting. It sure looks like there's real potential for legacy liability to new landowners, and like just a lot of job security for attorneys going forward. Not necessarily a good thing for the rest of us, but I felt like I learned a lot. I also attended along with Mr. Harris and somebody else from the regional staff, I forget who.
Monica
Barrientes, a community outreach program in Corralitos on April 30 for Pinto Lake. They were reporting, was put on by Santa Cruz RCD, the County of Santa Cruz, City of Watsonville, Dr. Los Huertos from CSUMB, and some folks from UCSC. And they were reporting back to the community on the results of some research they had done with a 319H, if I got that right?
Yes.
Grant that we gave them to understand the question of cyanobacteria in Pinto Lake. Pinto Lake has the dubious distinction of having had a sample pulled that had 3 million times the EPA limit of cyanotoxin in it, a record for California. I believe they're about to report back in the next month to us on the final results of that project. That they've done a couple of really interesting things. You know, there's some subsistence fishing that goes on at that lake, which is often a problem for us in different regions, and they've identified one of the key problems in the lake as carp, an introduced species that sucks mud up from the bottom, strains invertebrates, and puts it out in the lake, which pulls phosphates out that feed the cyanobacteria. So they've started the Carpageddon program. I gave the board members a little flyer, and there's a couple more over there. about the question of the lake and the Carpageddon program, and they're giving a prize every month to whoever can pull out the most carp from the lake and turn it in at the city park. Mm. I thought it was just very clever to try to take the fact that people are fishing anyway and they're often fishing for subsistence and find a way to substitute something in so that they're actually benefiting the watershed and not injuring the people. I've been sitting kind of tag-teaming with Dr. Hunter on the governor's drinking water stakeholders group. And I just want to say I've been really impressed by how it's being done. I mean, they've stayed away from the trickier issues of the long-term problem of how you stop nitrates from going into drinking water, which is an issue that they're not going to find much consensus on. But they've really focused well on the short-term issues of providing safe drinking water, particularly in the Tulare Lake and Salinas Valley basins. They've had a real good process where pretty much the whole group and every subcommittee of the group is co-chaired, with one co-chair being somebody from either the water provider or ag community, and the other co-chair being somebody from the environmental or environmental justice community. And I've just been real impressed. They're currently working on trying to identify more clearly the needs of the They're focusing on disadvantaged communities with impacted drinking water in unincorporated areas in those two regions. And they're currently working on identifying more clearly the needs of those small systems, potential funding sources for the needs. Key areas are looking at are engineering and management help to seek upgrade funding, O&M expenses, how to help consolidate small systems so that they can better apply for funding, and leadership development in very small systems with little or no formal structure, something we're still really working on getting the big group to understand is a priority. And they're moving on next to the question of data, of really getting better data to identify the exactly where these small systems are, because a lot of them are kind of below the radar. I should mention Matt Keeling from our staff is also sitting on both that group and the subcommittee that I've been working on, which is the capacity and technical assistance group. So that's it.
Mike, has there been any discussion about at some point in time looking at sources?
No. You know, I have to say it's a group that the governor's office set up to try to pull together big irrigation districts, water providers, environmental justice folks, environmentalists, ag, and they were directed initially by the governor to focus on the short and medium term issues of what it takes to get safe drinking water to the people living in those areas, mm-hmm. which I personally think was a smart move, because they're trying to work on not a consensus model where everybody in the room has to agree, but a consensus model where they're looking for kind of overall agreement in general. And so they're really targeting the short and medium term questions, not those long term questions.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I would say also that our efforts here at Region 3, especially with the GAP program and the groundwater testing of drinking water from drinking water wells, is something that I think opened up some of the issues that this group was hoping to hold off on and maybe take on further down the road. But it really was apparent in the first round, which occurred last summer, that those most at risk are the small domestic private well systems, which serve less than 15 hookups, and those wells are never monitored or tested once they are in place. So once they're in place and they function as they should, then there's no further testing. And so these are typically in rural areas and typically in ag areas. So there was some resistance on the first round at looking at those, because they don't even meet the criteria for creating alternative water systems, like developing their own water public systems. And so what options are available for them are so narrow and so limited, and I think Matt Keeling did an excellent job in providing, you know, through our work, constant updates on what we're learning and our approach to this, including education and outreach about the possibilities for assistance for testing wells. And there's a tie there to working with farmers that are considered challenged economically. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's some good elements to this that help to show that there are small steps that can be taken. But I think the main thing that came out of that was that they did identify funding for emergency water supply, which is bottled water, mm-hmm. when someone is discovered to be consuming nitrate contaminated water.
And what's that funding source?
I believe that it's part of the IRWIMP out of Department of Water Resources. I think they identified some state revolving fund monies where they pockets and pockets and pockets, but there was some emergency monies. Mm-hmm. And that was something I know that Matt and I pushed very hard in the dialogue to recognize that is something that has to be addressed. Once you test the well and you find out it's contaminated, what happens? Mm-hmm. So that was, I think, a very good outcome.
Thank you. Russ?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you and the Vice Chair were out of the country, I sat in on the Chair's meeting on Monday the 13th, May 13th, and most of the discussion of the whole hour was setting up the agenda for the WQCC meeting and the date, which all of you probably have received, that there'll be a field trip on the 23rd of October, and then the WQCC will be on the 24th and the 25th. Some of the subjects that were battered around for the two-day meeting were climate change, disadvantaged areas, water quality and water quantity, mm-hmm. A panel to set up for new science, how climate change will change water boards, and what can water boards do to adapt, and the possibility of transferring the drinking water from the public state health to the water boards is a topic, mm-hmm. and disadvantaged areas and communities, environmental justice, financial assistance for disadvantaged areas, mm-hmm. and report on legislation updates, beneficial uses for water, and of course the afternoon of the last day will be with the State Water Board Council on new laws and regulations and how you dress yourself at board meetings. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Mr. Vice Chair, on being able to sit on that particular chair's meeting.
Well, we appreciate you stepping in, Russ. And how about the April 26th staff meeting? Would you like to report somewhat on that? And I'll add in, that's the staff meeting you and I attended.
I'm going to let you kick that off, and I'm going to fill in. You're the boss, and I'm just ride the shotgun.
Well, okay. This is mainly for the other board members that weren't there. So we staff had a meeting on April 26th, and it was like from 9 to 3, something like that, pretty much all day. Russ and I were there. We were sat in the back, basically. This was not a meeting that we wanted to play any kind of an active role in, but just to kind of watch and observe. This staff meeting was on the cooperative groundwater monitoring proposals that were in play with the different ag groups. And I think, were there four ag groups present, Russ?
Four.
Yes. Four. Okay. So I know Abby was there, Claire was there, and there. I know there was one other, and at least maybe there was a fourth one. So there were four, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, it was really interesting. We listened pretty much the whole time, Russ and I. We did not attempt to get in and direct anything. We asked a few questions from time to time just for our own clarification. What became apparent to me towards the end when I asked the folks that were here, and I said, you know, Russ and I are going to be leaving soon, and if there's anything that you really want us to hear, please share that with us. And that's when we had some, I think, some frank discussion and comments from people. And there's clearly, I'd say, a misunderstanding, you know, kind of going both ways between what staff has been putting out there. I think staff has been clear in what it's been saying. I don't think there's been anything said by staff that hasn't been clear, but I think that the ag groups have not been processing that and understanding what is being expected of them and what needs to be done. And without trying to put, this isn't a matter of my trying to put blame on anybody, okay? So don't take anything I say as fault or blame. It's just an observation that at that juncture, my impression was there just hasn't been a complete understanding of what the two sides have been kind of expecting from one another. And so, I mean, we went over some of the same things that have been an issue for the ag folks. One is, again, you know, confidentiality of data. Now, you know, this is an old item, so it continues to be brought up. You know, we heard this when we were discussing the order itself before we voted on it. And so, I mean, I think staff has been clear. Our attorney has been clear on that. To me, it is kind of an old issue, but it for the ag folks, it's still very much in play, they hope, and part of the problem for them. So I wish there was some way we could kind of get past that, but apparently that it's still somewhat of an impediment as an issue. Another thing that was obvious was that the ag folks were not quite sure about how much information they needed to provide at each of the most recent deadlines for submission of their initial report. Some confusion there on their part. And, you know, I think some of this confusion stems from the fact that, you know, as an agency, what we do is typically lay out what the standards are and the goals, and we really rely upon stakeholders to kind of figure out on their own, with not a lot of handholding, what they need to do to comply. And I think with this particular large stakeholder that they apparently want more from staff in terms of, I mean, I'll call it hand-holding, but they want more information, more detail. They want to know what is really more expected of them. And that's been kind of problematic because they feel that they haven't had enough detail to enable them to provide the information they want by the deadlines. An issue that they raised is that, you know, they don't have complete buy-in from all of their members at this point. And so they're not able to give staff a detailed list of each farm that's going to be involved in their particular cooperative monitoring program. Also, the boundaries were an issue. How are these folks going to set up their boundaries for their program? What responsibilities are they going to have in terms of those properties that are inside the boundaries but maybe are farms that don't want to participate? So I think there was a lot of good information that was exchanged, and the impression I got when we left was that at least a lot more got on the table, and I was hopeful that, you know, both staff could see that that despite their efforts, continued efforts at getting information to the farming groups, that, you know, it's still coming up short in terms of the farm groups, you know, understanding of what they need to be doing at this point. So, Russ, why don't you chime in, and I may have a few other thoughts that pop in my mind.
Well, I think you covered most of the issues, and again, I think one of the big things that I took from the whole meeting, and as Jeff said, that we weren't there to be the leadership of this. It was the staff and an ag meeting, and we were there just as observers to see how it went and so forth. But again, I think one of the issues that I heard was interpretation of the order itself. And there was, even with the consultants that the ag groups brought with them, they had problems with interpreting. Jeff had alluded to what the message of the staff put out has been the same in the directive from the board. But I think it's the language that we put out to the general public that they have a hard time understanding. And I think I've said this in the past, that we have to not speak as engineers or experts, but we have to be able to talk to people on the level that they understand. And I think that's where the communication problems come into effect. As far as the confidential issue, if I remember correctly, confidential issue has been from day one with the ag orders going back 10 years, 12 years ago. And it still persists. And it's a big controversial thing within the ag groups themselves. One of the things that I also heard was, what is the advantage of doing the cooperative monitoring? And I think there was some large ag growers at that particular meeting that asked that particular question, as well as some of the grower shipper organizations. And you would think that, you know, in the normal thought, if a group goes together, there would be some benefit. Of course, the benefit I would see is to the staff, because instead of having 25 or 30 different applications, you would have one from one group that would cover the 25 or 30, so there'd be some advantage. And that was some of the issues. I think there was a much clearer understanding between the staff and the ag participants, but I think we'll probably hear more about it tomorrow with the items that we have on the agenda. But overall, I thought the day was very productive. There's some confusion on interpretation and the timing, when the certain reports are supposed to be in and what those reports are really, what they're really looking for. So I think in time the board will hear those probably tomorrow. You'll hear some more of it, and I'm sure that the correspondence that you've received in the last couple of weeks from the Grower Shippers Association and also the staff's response to that shows that what Jeff and I have just given you, there's still some interpretation, there's still some timing problems. The growers are really not sure totally what they're expected to do, and they're just overwhelmed with the whole item of the ag order and the cost. And, of course, ag communities are in stress in some areas with all the different things that are happening within the area. So I thought it went very well as far as I was concerned. I think I have a better understanding of what the ag is looking at. And, again, I think it's a lot in communications.
Good.
Mr. Chair?
Sure.
In reviewing the four proposals, which we received in our packets for tomorrow, I just wanted to make one brief comment. I was hoping that and I don't know if you have a thought about this, having been in on the discussion, with one of the four proposals coming very close to meeting all the criteria, that might also be another pathway for the other groups to see what it is that has been proposed that is meeting the criteria according to staff review, because it is a very technical order, and the assistance that's required is acknowledged in the order itself. It allows for different types of consulting, and it kind of lays out some potential ways in which to get the information and develop that kind of scientific basis for moving forward. And, of course, we know the RCDs and and UC Davis and UC Extension are also engaged in with assistance. But I'm hoping that one proposal that is going to move forward, apparently, I think that's the Santa Rosa group here in San Luis Obispo County. Mm-hmm. It is a small scale, and that may be another reason why they were able to put the pieces together, and they also had some work that was already in place. But let's hope that becomes an example, a way of looking and understanding and seeing how that interpretation looks spelled out as an actual groundwater monitoring plan. So I don't know if you heard anything like that.
The only thing I heard, I think, that touches on what you just brought up is that I think staff has had discussions with these ag groups in terms of maybe one of these proposals being a more of a model than others because it's further along, and and maybe they've had discussions about maybe combining their efforts. Mm-hmm. So, but I think we're going to hear about that right mm-hmm. tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one thing I might suggest you guys take a look at is, was it the April 17th letter, Ken, that I think was sent out before the staff
yes.
meeting?
Yes.
So, do they have a copy? I'm sure we were given a copy.
I believe so.
Yeah. So, you might take a look at that.
Is that
yeah. Yeah, it's in the supplemental.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Because that, you know, that's that letter, which is it's just a very typical, what I said during the meeting, this is a regulatory response. Mm-hmm. And, you know, staff prepares these routinely mm-hmm. like that. It just had a very interesting reaction from the ag groups, you know, and the people that read it, you know, the individual ag mm-hmm. Folks. And so it really put them off. And it's unfortunate because they kind of focused a lot about, you know, the tenor of the letter mm-hmm. and frustrated them, and they felt that, you know, that they were going down this path and it was going to be kind of an impossibility for them to meet the goals mm-hmm. that had been identified. And again, with kind of this is a common theme, that they're not really acknowledged at all for, you know, what they have done in the past or what they're doing in terms of working towards this end right now. So you might take a look at that, okay, because that'll put things in perspective a little bit for the letter we got from Abby very recently. Mike?
Okay.
Yeah. I was going to hold this for tomorrow's discussion, but just briefly, since you brought it up, I reviewed that letter.
Yeah.
I reviewed the recent response we got in the supplemental, and what the one thing that struck me in the response was I had thought when we discussed this in March that, as I recall, the deadline for submitting the initial round, the proposal, was the day of our last meeting, and that then there was a month for the region to respond, and maybe I'm remembering it incorrectly, but my recollection was that the thought was that during that month there would be like back and forth and back and forth, and rather than we wait a month and respond at the end of the month, mm-hmm. because of course our time is so short to get this done. And the impression I got from the grower shipper response that just came in to the April 17th letter, whenever it was. was that we waited the full 30 days and then gave them this response saying none of this works. Well, that was their perception of what we said, obviously. And I was kind of surprised by that because I had thought I think I got the impression from staff, I may be mistaken, that during that period from March 15th to April 15th, it wasn't just going to be we wait 30 days and respond. There's going to be a lot of back and forth. Now, maybe that's what happened, and it simply wasn't reflected in growership.
Staff has bent over backwards and has been in constant contact with all the groups and has made themselves available throughout the process on the phone with their consultants. So it has been a dynamic dialogue ongoing with an occasional formal letter transmitted between the parties.
So it wasn't a question then of they gave us a proposal on March 15th and a month later we gave them a response, but
no.
That it was actually, okay, that's
no.
Good to hear. Thank no. you.
So why don't we just put off any further discussion on this until tomorrow when staff can weigh in and we have a presentation of this item more formally. So, mm-hmm. Okay, any other board member reports? Dr. Wolf.
Three quick items. The first one is a follow-up on the Pinto Lake and DTT, is that we have another lake within our region which has the dubious privilege to have the highest DTT content in the nation, and that is also Flacco Lake, which is on the state park property. And it has been an issue also because of recreational fishermen's going into that lake. So that's just a little note on that. The second one is that the San Luis Obispo County Agricultural Liaison Advisory Board is expressing increasing concerns over fracking. I know that our staff attended a meeting recently on that topic. There was a workshop. But that's an area that's becoming a big concern, particularly coming from some of the wine grape grower community in the Monterey County's area. So this is going to be agendized with ALAB with a hope to instill some recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. You know, ALAB is strictly an advisory body. I cannot set any rule, but there is a precedent where Santa Barbara County Board of Supervisors has taken some official positions on fracking within that county. So we're hoping that perhaps we can dovetail this effort. The third item is that there is an increasing renewed interest in dry farming as part of sustainability because of the concerns of groundwater depletion. So I've been involved with some educational workshop on the topic of dry farming associated with wine grapes, and recently a couple of television pieces on Fox and NBC. So that's my update.
Thank you. If I could, Mr. Chair, I saw one of the pieces 2 nights ago. I saw Vice Chair Wolf on the television talking about sustainable growing.